Hey, welcome everybody to another edition of the Rebel Room. A lot to talk about as we kind of take a look at the Rebels we love, Mike, 4-2. All systems were a go, and then they went to San Jose on Friday. They lost, was it 40-7? And here we are, 4-2 at the turn. Air Force on Saturday, the hard part of the schedule coming. But they got four wins, and Reno and Hawaii are at the end of the schedule. So I'm already packing for a bowl, Mike.
That's the right attitude. That's how you should feel about it. 4-2. It's a great first half of the season. Probably far beyond anyone's reasonable expectations before the season started. Did they leave a winnable game out there? They maybe could have snuck out that Cal game in week two. But even without it, 4-2, it's amazing. Now, and like you said, you get those two games at the end of the schedule. Those should both be wins. That gets you to 6. If you can get one more during this four-game stretch that's coming up against tough opponents, then even better. But I think the right way to look at it is, yeah, they're way ahead of the curve. They're pretty much locked into a bowl game at this point. That's a very successful season.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, four wins – by UNLV standards, unfortunately, has been 2 years worth of victories. So what they did in the month of September was what many people who've played in the program the last 20 years said that they did in, you know, 2 years worth of competing for UNLV. So they're in a great spot. Of course, you know, they're going to get beat up in the next few weeks. Air Force, Notre Dame, you know, the heart of the schedule. And Doug Brunfeld, your quarterback, left with a towel around his head. It looked awful on Friday. Do we know what's up with Brunfeld? And if he doesn't go, is it Cameron Frill's show?
Yeah, we're going to hear from Marcus Arroyo later today. We're recording this on a Monday morning. So he'll have his weekly press conference in just a little bit here. And he'll give an update, I assume, on Doug Brumfield's status. I think we know what that update is going to be. You and I are not medical doctors, but I think it's pretty clear a concussion that he's dealing with. So the question is, you know, how quickly do you want him to come back from that? How severe is it? Probably, if I had to guess, is it probably not going to play against Air Force, but we don't know. And if he's out for a game, two games, any length of time, I do think, you know, Cameron Frill was the first guy off the bench against San Jose State. He played well. He's the guy. Like, he's going to get the chance here. I wouldn't expect them to try to work in Harrison Bailey. I think they'll just give the ball to Frill and tell him, hey, it's your job. You're going to play the entire game. Barring some sort of underperformance on his part, I think it's Frill's job now for as long as Brumfield may be out.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a game UNLV, I think, is a 9-point betting underdog against the Falcons. Of course, anytime you play Air Force, you've got to be ready to kind of stop their unique rushing attack that they're one of a handful of schools nationally that still do it. And it's just something you can't scheme for 3 or 4 days and go out there and do it. You've got to have some consistent reps. I know some programs, Mike, they even do 20 minutes a day planning for Air Force all season, so they're semi-prepared for it. But a big challenge at home at Allegiant Stadium. You know, the thing that I guess before we look at Saturday, not only did the Rebels not move the ball against San Jose, they gave up 40-some points. I guess you're allowed a stinker every now and then. San Jose's had UNLV's number the last few years. But are you hitting the panic button yet, or are we just chalking this up to, hey, it was a bad night?
I think you can, if you're going to excuse a team for losing a game in that fashion, I think you can pick a road game against a good opponent where your quarterback gets knocked out in the first 15 minutes and you're down by 14-0 when that happens. That's probably a recipe for a blowout loss. And I will say, this was that San Jose State game. There were actual stakes to that game. Like, that was two teams jostling for first place in the West Division. That was a meaningful game, a big game. And UNLV just doesn't play big games. They have no big game experience. the program just has not been in a game that matters in 5 years. I had to go back to 2017 when they played the finale in Reno. And if they were 5-6, if they won, they would have gone to a bowl game. They lost that game, but that was the last time they played a game that had any meaning beyond, you know, just the exercise of playing 60 minutes of football. So I guess, yeah, it's, if you want to excuse them, yeah, they just weren't ready for that sort of atmosphere, you know, because there is something to be said for getting up for a big game. San Jose clearly did. And maybe UNLV, you know, now that they've got that experience, the next time something like that comes up, they'll be a little more, they'll be able to dig a little bit deeper and sort of meet the level of performance of their opponent. But yeah, I'm not going to hold that game against them too much. A lot of things are working against them. And if you're going to get blown out in one game this year, that might be the one.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think we'll see how they react. Is it going to be a quick fix? Or are they going to come ready to play against Air Force at home? Or is it going to linger over into the second week? And, you know, I'd say the good thing about Cameron Friel is they won games with him last year. He proved that he was capable in relief. And for all intents and purposes, there is a huge drop because Brumfield has been very good, right? But maybe it's not as significant. How many programs in the country could go to a quarterback who's won games for you in a previous year?
Yeah, Friel is not the most of their concerns right now. I think they have a fair level of confidence in Cameron Friel. There were times last year where he was thrown in as a true freshman, and there were times where he actually looked pretty good. He's got a really strong arm. He's tough. He can take a beating. So if you start him against Air Force, something that I think is really important is you can be fairly sure that he's going to finish the game. Like if you put him out there, he's not going to get hurt on the second or third drive. And then all of a sudden you're down to your number three and you're just scrambling. So I think he's pretty reliable in that regard. It seems like things are so stacked against him this week for Air Force, with a backup quarterback and coming off a bad loss, and the way that they looked against Air Force last year, where they played Air Force in the finale last year. And it was the least competitive I think I've ever seen UNLV football look in my time covering the team. They did not belong on the field. So if you can come off that, and then on Saturday this week, you're down 10-7 after the first quarter, or you're just kind of hanging around for the first 20 minutes and you're still within striking distance, you may see some sort of belief start to build up, some momentum, like, hey, our backup quarterback is playing pretty well and we're hanging in there. They killed us last year, but you know, look at us, we're still in this game and we're at home, and maybe you can start to think about pulling an upset. So I don't think that it's as impossible this week as it may look at first glance.
Yeah. And I mean, no matter what happens this week or against Air Force or against Fresno, they're going to have a chance to get bowl eligible against Reno and Hawaii. Now, I hate Michael in my heart that it's going to come down to a game against Reno, because
I was going to ask you not to jump in, but I do view that those two final games, Reno and Hawaii, as wins. But you know, you're 4-2. Say that the worst case scenario, you lose the next four and you go into those two games 4-6, but Brumfield is back and you're reasonably healthy. Is that a sky is falling scenario? Like, are you going to be able to remain calm if, you know, week by week over this next month, now they're 4-3, now they're 4-4, 4-5, 4-6. And all of a sudden you haven't won a game in a month and a half, and you've got two must-win games to close out the season. On paper, it looks like something they should be able to do pretty easily, but what would your confidence level be if we end up in that spot?
Yeah. And see that, and that's, you go back earlier to them not having played in a big game. Add the pageantry of the Cannon game, and that's, you know, on a losing streak, coming into two must-win games, even though the opponents are lesser. You're talking a team whose psyche now would be shrunk, right?
And what kind of play spoiler?
Yeah. And but at the same time, bad teams get worse as the season grows longer. Every team's dinged up. When you're already bad and you lose a starter and you got to replace him with somebody who isn't a starter, right? We've seen it time and again. You know, UNLV, I always go back to Tony Sanchez's first year, and, you know, they had one tight end dress out for the last game against Wyoming. So you're going to get that with those teams. It's just for me and Mike, I think I have a good voice of reason for people who've lived here for a while. For UNLV football, we've only cared about beating Reno. That's kind of like the benchmark for a good season or not. So to have them be – to have that game also couple as an opportunity to go to a bowl game, which, listen's only happened four times in program history, right? Now all of a sudden you're like – that's where it hits your radar a little bit because, you know, they haven't played – any meaningful football, and then to have to play it against a Reno team that's got nothing to play for, that's what worries me.
Yeah, I would feel, if I'm a fan of UNLV, I would feel, I mean, it goes without saying, but I would feel 100 times more confident if I could get one of these next four games, if I can beat Air Force, Notre Dame, San Diego State, or Fresno State. It's just, I'm looking at the, if I had to pick one of those games out, I'm trying to figure out which one sort of gives me is, I'm like, which one, if I have to put all my eggs in one basket of these next four, it's kind of an interesting question. I don't like the matchup against Air Force. I don't like them at Notre Dame, obviously. I'm kind of circling that game at San Diego State, November 5th. Like, I'm watching San Diego State this year. I don't think they can score more than 14 points. If you give me a healthy Doug Brumfield, you give me one of their injured receivers back, you know, whether it's Weimer or Kyle Williams, I'm saying win that San Diego State game and you're pretty much guaranteed a bowl. So that's the game I'm looking at out of the next four.
Yeah. And San Diego State traditionally has been very good, but I mean, this year they've just beat Hawaii by 2 points on Saturday, 16-14. Right. They struggled against, I mean, they beat Idaho State 38-7, but UNLV put on a complete clinic against them. Right. They do have a decent little win against Toledo at home, 17-14. But you're completely correct, Michael. San Diego State is struggling to score. And I mean, literally, they won at the buzzer against Hawaii. So it wasn't like they held on. They had to rally to win.
Yeah. So, and then you've got Fresno State at home, and this is a tough 5-game stretch, starting with the San Jose State game that they lost. They're going to be an underdog in all these games. So you're saying, can you give me one upset win in a month and a half? And if you press me to do it, I'm looking at that San Diego State game. That's the one I'm looking at. You win that, you'll be, you know, 5-5 going into the last two games. Mm-hmm. And then you've got so much margin for error because you're not going to lose both of them. I think.
Well, I mean, Hawaii's playing better though, Mike, and Reno is, you know, the one thing I could say about Reno is they respect the rivalry and they're going to get up and ready and be ready to play.
But I would counter by saying that I think for once I think you're not giving UNLV enough credit. I do think UNLV is a good team. Like, I just think UNLV is good enough to that they're not going to lose both of those. Like, I have confidence.
Good enough if healthy, though, Mike. If healthy.
True.
Right? They're really limited right now at wide receiver. Who knows what's going to happen at quarterback, even though we suspect it won't be a long-term thing.
True. But it does – one thing that it does with Doug Brumfield being out is it sort of – He only made it two games last year before he was knocked out for the season. He couldn't make it through half of the schedule this year before he got another injury. I mean, a concussion's tough. It's tough to avoid those. When they happen, they kind of happen. But, you know, 5 games this year and then he's hurt. So What's the longest stretch he can give you staying healthy? You can't guarantee his health for those final two games, but big picture, I still think they're in good shape. If they can win one of these next four, they're in even better shape and you can pretty much lock it in. Basically, despite the loss at San Jose State, despite how bad it looked and how they came out of that game, I'm still very, very high on UNLV at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, this isn't, I mean, I know, you know, first of all, every bowl projector out there has them in a bowl game, and the Arizona Bowl was at the last home game. So there's momentum there, and it's refreshing to hear. And I don't think Marcus Arroyo gets enough credit, but it's a testament to what he did in the transfer portal. I mean, the guy rebuilt the program using, you know, the third string running back at Louisville, or, you know, the second string Z wide receiver at Michigan State. And those guys have had a tremendous impact. And, you know, it's fun to see how the portals work in UNLV's favor.
For sure. Offensive line too. They've added multiple starters from the transfer portal. And their old line has just been transformed. They went from, if you think about what they looked like 2 years ago in Arroyo's first season, where they couldn't block anybody, and it was almost like a health risk to put a quarterback out behind that line.
Sure.
And now they're just mauling people. It's all because of the transfer portal. So, yeah, halfway point of the season, right? I think we can say that they've outperformed my expectations. They've outperformed your expectations to this point.
Oh, I mean, again, like we started at the top, they had, you know, they've got four wins through September. That's 2 years worth of victories. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, I could count the four with the best of them, Mike. It's one of my strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah. So additionally, because I know a lot of people are geeked up for this UNLV basketball season. We're about, 2.5-3 weeks away from games. The Rebels also, basketball, have a lot of players in the portal. And, you know, the league media day is coming up. And I guess there's some excitement because it's a new season. And you never know if this is the year it's going to click. But they haven't been to the tournament since 2013, I believe, maybe 2012. What's the latest on basketball?
They are in the middle of preseason practice. They're pretty much healthy at this point. Isaiah Cottrell is out. He's still got a foot injury, but they do expect him back before the start of the year. But they are practicing in full. It's tough to tell at this point exactly what you're looking at. There is some, it's a moderately talented team. If you ask me for the big picture, I think they're moderately talented. They're not talented enough that they can just roll out of bed and beat British Columbia. As we saw in those exhibition games, they've got to play well. They're going to rely on system and style to win games, not so much talent. So it's tough to predict with that kind of team. You can't just go to practice and say, oh, wow, look at all these plays they're making. This is going to be a good team. It's a little more nuanced than that. I don't really know how good they're going to be. I think they'll be above 500. I think they'll be tough and hard-nosed. But it's really difficult to tell how that's going to translate when you get out there against live opponents.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that loss in Canada during the exhibition season to what was essentially a junior college team in America – is looming in everybody's head is like, okay, these guys are going to be that bad. Where I think if you look on the other side of that equation, they had a bad game after traveling north of the border. First time a lot of people were playing together, and they were much better in the other few games. I mean, not only was it a new roster for the most part, you know, a virtually new coaching staff, and thankfully they got it out of the way in a, you know, a gym with a wireless feed showing the game on YouTube or whatever to a team from Canada and not the first week of the season.
Yeah. I don't want to overreact to that game. But like you said, it does stick in your memory. And the one takeaway I would still carry from that game is, like I said, if it's the 1990 running Rebels going up there to Canada, yeah, they can mess around and not play hard and sort of play off script and still win by 50 because they're just that talented. This team is not that talented. Like if they don't follow the script, if they don't play their style, if they're not committed, if they have a bad night, they can lose to anyone on their schedule, including British Columbia. So this is going to be a team that's got to be, you're going to have to see an incredible level of focus every night, defensive commitment, commitment to rebounding and doing like dirty work and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be a testament to Kevin Kruger's coaching if he can get that out of them every night. Because if they have a night where they slip up and they don't give it 100%, it's going to be very obvious because they're going to lose. So you're kind of trying to thread the needle where we're not going to be the most talented team on the court, but we're going to do enough of our style and our toughness and these sort of intangible things are going to carry us through. And that's how we're going to win. It's a tough way to win, but they seem to believe they've got enough players and they've got, it's going to work and the fit is good and the style is good. They think it's going to work.
Well, your optimism / pessimism is quite vexing because we really can't figure out if they're going to be good or not. And we might not know until they get into league play. The one thing to me that is kind of been the theme of the last 8 or 9 years as they failed to get to the tournament is they just can't find the right formula, right? You know, you went with like,
yeah,
Dave Rice had a lot of talent, but they couldn't play well together, right? Guys who were in the NBA. Marvin Menzies tried to build a team based on the way he wanted them to play. Actually won 20 games, took third in the league. I guess that's kind of the benchmark, right? Kruger tried to build up using some transfers, some guys that were, you know, like we talked about with football, the backup at Louisville. So he'll take the backup at Texas. So eventually you'd like to think that it's going to pan out and work. But I guess the one thing it's like, if you look at the roster, and this is me talking, not asking you, but of course, give me your opinion. But you look at the roster and you're like, who is the player on that roster where you're like, okay, game's on the line. We need a bucket. We're going to get the ball to Joe and Joe's going to get it done. Who's Joe?
They don't really have a guy like that from what I can see. I think the closest thing is probably Elijah Harkless, who I think is going to be their leading scorer. He's a senior transfer from Oklahoma he scored 10 points a game at Oklahoma last year. But when you go back and watch him, it's like, it's not a pretty 10 points. It's not like a clear out my side and I'm going to take my man one-on-one and I'm going to get you some buck. It's like tough. I'm scrapping out these baskets kind of thing. So I don't think they have that guy. I don't think they have someone who can do that. It's going to be a team like oriented, move the ball around, try to find the open man, score on some offensive putbacks, like share the ball kind of thing. And that's, like I said, if it all works and these guys turn out to be great fits and their rotation is 9 deep and everyone knows their roles and it all clicks, I could see them winning 20 plus games and being one of the better teams in the Mountain West. It's just hard to gauge in practice when they're just playing against each other and just going through drills. It's just hard to gauge how effective it's going to be against real live opponents. But I, like you, it speaks to my comment about overall talent level. I just don't think they have that guy that you're talking about where it's like, hey, this game is close and there's a minute left. You're going to take our last 3 shots on these next 3 possessions. Can you get us across the finish line? I don't think they have a guy like that. So that is something that's worrisome, I would suppose, unless someone emerges throughout the course of the year, but I don't see it right now.
Yeah. So there's no Bryce Hamilton is basically what you're saying.
There's no one like that. There's not even a Donovan Williams, I would say, who was their number 2 guy last year. So it's very workmanlike. It's everybody has got to have that workmanlike attitude where it's like, I may not score, but I'm going to set the screen that helps you score. And to ask college kids to do that night in, night out for 30 plus games without having a couple blips is tough. So I am very interested to see if it works because it's like, If it does, I think they'll be good, but it's kind of threading the needle.
Yeah, and again, the one thing, and I don't know if this is fair or not, but you think that you would like to think that Kevin Kruger is going to figure it out, that you know, Lon Kruger retired from Oklahoma to move back to Nevada to basically be his son's unofficial advisor. And every day, Kevin theoretically is talking to Lonnie, and sooner than later, the Kruger magic's going to work. We're hanging our hat on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, Lon has been at all the practices that I've been to. I've missed a couple because I had to travel for the UNLV football game, but he's been there at every practice. He's watching. Kevin has said many times that after practice, he'll talk to his dad, he'll call him, they'll hash things out. Sort of big picture stuff. And he values that input. So, I mean, he is involved. So you would think at some point you've got to trust the judgment where if Kevin Kruger and by proxy Lon Kruger, if they think that this can work in the Mountain West, then yeah, I think we got to trust them. Right.
I'd rather trust them than someone else. I mean, at least they've got a proven track record. At least they love UNLV. Back about 3 minutes ago when I mentioned all the coaches, I forgot about TJ Otzelberger, who, you know, recruited, I'd like to say, the Super 21, because, you know, we do our Super 17 here at the Sun, and he picked guys that would be like 21 to 28 and decided to start them in games, and that just didn't work out. But he got to the tournament last year at Iowa State with basically the same philosophy. So what do I know, Mike?
I don't know. I think you're seeing a different thing. Kruger, at least it looks like physically, it doesn't look like the TJ Otzelberger teams, where TJ wanted thinkers. He wanted guys who could think quickly on the floor, and he valued that more than physicality and physical attributes. I think Kevin Kruger, like, he wants athletes. He wants those guys who like, you know, look good in the team photo, in the uniform. So I think they look more like a physically imposing team. And that's kind of what he's trying to build, like a team that can match San Diego State physically, on the defensive end with toughness. So it's a different style than previous coaches. I don't know.
I mean, either way, the other thing, and I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole, because we'll probably do another Rebel Room to go in depth with basketball sooner than later, but the schedule is so weak this year that they're going to have to win the Mountain West to get in the NCAAs, right?
Probably, unless you just go undefeated in non-conference play, you know, unless you're like 11-0 and you run the table, and maybe you start getting some AP votes at that point, and you can get on the radar that way. But yeah, but for the most part, you're going to have to win the Mountain West.
Yeah, which we know from past experience has only been done twice, in 07 and 08. So here we are 14 years later. And now all of a sudden you flip over to year three with Kruger. And when is that guy going to have to make a tournament before we start talking? Is it time to hit the reset button? If we're using the same timeline that we gave Menzies, three and out and CDR, correct?
Yeah. It's you're already in year two. I would not bet on them making it this year. The one thing I know about Kevin Kruger, though, is that if they don't make it this year, the team is going to look completely different next year. And they're going to bring in a whole new crop of transfers. They're probably going to bring in another 6, 7, 8, 9 newcomers next year. Mm-hmm. And you hope that with each year of credibility, like if UNLV can win 20 games and make it to the conference semifinals this year, maybe you can, we saw them get a better caliber of transfer this year. Like they landed transfers this year that they couldn't have gotten the year before. So maybe next year's crop will be like just incrementally better. And you see that improve, and you see like that on the court, and they keep getting better. Like that's what I would be the hope.
I mean, I just thought they had three really strong players last year in Ham, Hamilton, and Williams, right?
Yep.
And they couldn't even win a tournament game.
No, you're right. And it's hard to say, like, without saying, oh, look, well, we get this guy to replace Bryce Hamilton, this guy to replace Donovan Williams, it's hard to say like that they're going to be better. But it really is, they're going to try to be a collective. They're going to try to replace Bryce Hamilton with the scoring of three guys. Like they've got Luis Rodriguez from Mississippi, who's a forward who averaged, I think, like 6-7 points per game. But he's the kind of guy that they think, well, on the margins at Mississippi and the SEC, he's 7 points a game. But here in the Mountain West, we give him a few more shots. He might be an 11-point per game scorer or 12 points per game. And so they're kind of hoping for that additional production across the board from all 10 guys in the rotation will make up for Bryce Hamilton's 20 points. And it requires a lot of math and a lot of like teamwork. Like I said, which is just, it's really hard to gauge in practice, those sort of intangibles, like how much of, are they going to play together as a team enough to make up for an individual like Bryce Hamilton? I don't know. I honestly just don't know if it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Mike, I'm sure everybody loves hearing from us in good times and bad. But for all intents and purposes, things are looking up. It's a new basketball season. Hope springs optimism. And football's got four wins. And it's early October. So all systems a go.
This is the best they've been at this point in the season, both programs, in a long time. Like the collective optimism should be higher right now. As a fan, you should be feeling good about UNLV sports.
Exactly. Well, for Mike, I'm Ray, and this has been another edition of the Rebel Room. Thank you for listening.